and welcome to Con Air, the podcast. I am Mark Hit the Crystals Hoffmeyer.
And I am Jay Dashboard Dinosaur Cluett. Welcome you aboard Con Air Chapter 24. On this show, Mark and I fly our way through Con Air in 40 chapters, one at a time, with some wonderful guests. And this is Chapter 24. What happens in Chapter 24 of Con Air? Well, Larkin checks out the radio tower and finds a broken microphone, splashes of fresh blood, and the dead body of Phil, whilst the small plane pilot radios in that he'll be landing soon. Also landing soon is Swamp Thing and the Jailbird, who does not radio first, and just lands, almost taking out the small plane too. The small plane pilot hastily rolls out of his plane, and Swamp Thing smashes through some fences, lights, and a trapdoor before bedding the plane's nose in the sand directly in front of a propane tank. The Cons disembark and mostly celebrate, beating up the guards and running around, but Cyrus is concerned about the lack of Cindy in his plane, and the small plane pilot runs into the desert, terrified. So we need a guest to help us talk about Con Air Chapter 24, so joining us from Forgotten Films is Todd Lieber. Now, Todd, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Happy to have you.
We finally got there, Jay, in the unrated cut of Con Air. This is the chapter in which Garland Green, kills somebody. And Cyrus walks up to him and goes, "You better now," and then he lets him out. But we finally got there, Jay.
We did.
The one where Garland Green actually kills somebody.
Yeah, it's in the script, you know, before they get off the plane, Cyrus and Diamond Dog just kind of notice this dead guard body next to Garland. No one saw him kill him, and he just kind of shrugs.
And they shot the scene in the movie, but they cut it, which is very smart. Yeah. But this is it. We finally got there, Jay, where the scene where Steve Buscemi, there's blood going out of the guy's ear. So I don't know what, maybe he strangled him or head trauma or something. He didn't eat him or wear his head as a hat, but he did kill the guy in the unrated cut. So we finally got there, Jay.
So very with exciting. That, with that and the crime scene lock and finds, Todd, you could have had the bloodiest chapter of Con Air.
Yeah, I guess there's not a ton of blood in this movie, is there? I rewatched the whole thing the other night. Actually introduced it to my son for the first time. I was like, you know, I gotta rewatch this movie. It's been a few years. Sit down and watch this one with me. And he's like, what is it? I was like, well, it's Die Hard on a plane full of convicts. So he's all right, we'll watch that.
Sold. How old is your son?
My son is 20. So
what do you think?
Oh, he enjoyed it.
Yes.
We had a lot of fun watching this the other night. So yeah.
So you watched it recently, you watched it a few years ago, and did you watch it in theaters? And how has it held up for you since 97?
I didn't see this one in theaters, but of course watched it shortly thereafter, probably when it first came out on, were we still on VHS then? We were probably still on VHS.
Still on VHS, yeah. Matrix was 99, that's when DVD made the big shift.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, this movie has always been up there for me. This is one of the top Die Hard butt movies, you know. I've revisited this one several times. We did an episode, I had a previous podcast project called Walt Sent Me, where we talked about Disney movies, and this is a Disney movie under the Touchstone label.
Disney
Plus,
did
an episode on this.
Wow.
But you know, I have the soundtrack for this one tucked away somewhere in my CD collection. I love Con Air.
I have it on my phone.
Which edition do you like? The Leanne Rimes, or do you like the Martina McBride?
Isn't it Trisha Yearwood?
Trisha Yearwood.
Who's Martina McBride?
She's another country singer.
I know Martine McCutcheon.
Yeah, what's better, Martina McCutcheon or the Leanne Rimes version?
That's your favorite Martina. Come on.
Okay. Which artist would you like to hear sing this song? Like, I'd love to hear maybe Glenn Hansard of the Swell Season.
Once.
Sing this song. Or maybe, no, Eddie Vedder. Maybe some Shakira.
See, Johnny Cash is the first thing that came to my mind.
Because
Johnny Cash was doing all those cover versions back around this time.
Hurt myself.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, man.
But see, it always throws me when I watch this movie, because the version of that song that played on the radio all the time, endlessly, was the Leanne Rimes version. Mm-hmm. But the Trisha Yearwood version is what's in the movie. And I think I like Trisha Yearwood's version better. But yeah, one of the things I was explaining to my son as we watched this, I was like, that freaking song was on the radio every 10 minutes in 1997.
What would you rather listen to? Kiss from a Rose, which was everywhere. And when you turned around, Kiss from a Rose was there from Batman, the Batman Forever soundtrack. Actually, originally it was Free Willy 3 that it was on. And then Batman Forever made it famous in 95. Would you rather listen to Kiss from a Rose or the song from Con Air?
The song from Con Air, no doubt. Kiss from a Rose drives me crazy because, I mean, it's an end credit song. It doesn't really have anything to do with the movie. It's just over the end credits, you know. And while I have a certain appreciation for that, I like movies that actually have something to do with the movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great answer. That's better than what I could have put together at a moment's notice. That makes a lot of sense, actually. That's great.
I've been envisioning a thrash metal version of How Do I Live for the past couple of minutes.
Like the Pogues?
It's not good, but I want to hear it. Some band out there would have done that.
You know, there's
a ska version from Real Big Fish or something on one of their albums, I'm sure.
Oh, Real Big Fish ska version? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, there must be one out there somewhere.
That's beautiful.
They did a bunch of songs.
One of my favorite covers of all time is Kelly Clarkson has Since You've Been Gone. There's a band called A Day to Remember, and they're kind of they were a hardcore band, or are a hardcore band, and they did a cover of it, and it's one of the best covers I've ever heard. So Since You've Been Gone, A Day to Remember. I get no money for this, but just listen to it. Click it on, like, go on YouTube, Spotify. It'll change your life. You'll never
be the same. Some of those where you have, like, these thrash metal bands or whatever that do versions of songs that are far from that are interesting. I'm in the back of my mind, I'm a big fan of Genesis, and I always remember, isn't there like a version of Land of Confusion that's done by some kind of like a death metal band or something like that?
Oh,
I'm gonna look for this, so I hope so.
Yeah,
Genesis is another one of my favorites as well.
Wait, was it who did I can Phil Collins did I Can Hear You Calling in the Air Tonight?
Yeah,
like a rock band did a cover of that too, but it's not as good because it's not a thrash metal.
Disturbed did Land of Confusion.
Oh,
right. Genesis.
They also did Sound of Silence, Disturbed.
I will be listening to all of these later today. the soundtrack to my next run is sorted. Thank you very much, everyone.
One of the saddest ones was the Cranberry Zombie. I can't think of the name of the band. Something about Wolf. But they were supposed to record it with the artists from... No, not Wolf Mother. Zombie. That'd be amazing. Mother! Oh, God. Zombie! That'd be amazing. But yeah, it's...
I have to pay royalties for all these songs that you're singing bits.
Jay's got money. Right. It's all good.
Yeah.
They were supposed to record it with her, and then she tragically passed away. So we were missed out of a hard rock cover of Zombie with the lead singer of the Cranberries.
But at least we've singing got on the it. Version of it in the Pitch Perfect 3 riff-off. One of the worst.
Wait, what? Made.
Yeah, they do a riff-off in Pitch Perfect 3.
Of Zombie?
Yeah, it's in there. Along with a bunch of it's a bad film that was on TV the other day, and I watched it again for some reason. John Lithgow does an Australian accent.
Does John Lithgow sing it?
He doesn't. It's wow. Ruby. Is it?
Ruby Rose.
Ruby Rose, thank you. Yeah, her band. Anyway, it's bad. Pitch Perfect 3 is bad. We'll never do it on this show.
But
it's
you watched it again.
It's bad. It was on, and I was writing something, and it just kind of stayed on, and it's bad. Such a bad film. I like the first one. The second one's fine.
Haven't pulled the trigger on that one yet.
Don't ever, never, don't be lulled in by John Lithgow. It's not worth it. He does. He attempts an Australian accent. He's playing River Wilson's dad. It's not worth it at all. DJ Khaled is one of the main supporting actors. That's a reason not to watch this film.
All right. I just want to tell everybody a newfound glory. They did three albums called From the Screen to Your Stereo, 1, 2, and 3. And you got to listen to those. And also Weezer has a really good cover album. So those three albums by Newfound Glory and Weezer, check those out. Do a Spotify playlist. Change your life. You'll never be the same. You can't live without it.
But how? Okay.
Wait, but how?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
How will he live without it?
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Sorry, Jay.
That was bad. It was quite big.
How do I live without it? I want to know.
Pitch Perfect 3 level. Anyway, beautiful. Let's get into Con Air, please.
Oh, hey.
No, okay.
Not at all. I was reading the script for this, and Malloy, you know Malloy in the script was beaten as a child.
What?
Cole Meany's character.
I understood the words you said.
The angriest human being on the planet.
Yep.
In the script, he talks about how his dad used to beat him. And then John Cusack goes, great, we have a guy with daddy issues too.
Okay.
That's in the script. So Cole Meany's character admits to being abused by his father in the original script by Scott Rosenberg.
They cut one of our heroes dismissing it? Surely yeah. not.
Like Vince Larkin just makes fun of him for it. Oh, so, God. I mean, I think that gives some context to why Cole Meany's so mean.
Yeah,
putting that out there in the world.
Just misunderstood.
I don't think we needed that. I'm glad that was cut.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Yeah.
You don't want people in the theater feeling bad about that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So when Swamp Thing, at the start of this chapter, he's preparing to land. He prepares to land with the announcement. All right, you downed Peckerwoods, crank the knuckles, and hit the crystals. We're putting this baby down in the sandbox. I have,
oh, brother.
So what many does that questions. Even mean?
Like, I looked up where Peckerwood came from.
Yep, same. It's not generally used by white people. Apparently, it is a racial slur for white people.
Sounds about right.
But downed Peckerwoods, not sure what that means. Crank the knuckles, not what you do with knuckles. You do something very similar to crank. You do crack. You crack the knuckles.
Crack the knuckles.
Crank the knuckles. Yeah. I don't know what that is. And then hit the crystals. What?
Yeah.
In the script.
I don't
crank the knuckles and hit the crystals.
Sounds like a drug reference, but I ventured
into the weeds of Urban Dictionary, and crystal seems to refer to a woman, any kind of woman. There's any kind of positive, negative, any kind of connotation you could apply. Crystal specifically replies to every single one of them. It seems. Other than that, in crystal meth, I don't know. What does this mean? Help
crank
me.
Crank is considered crystal meth, correct? According to the research I did.
Okay.
So like crank is another word.
In person.
So they're saying like crystal meth is another word for crank, but I don't know how you crank the knuckles and hit the crystals. Like you don't crush the crystal meth with your fists by cranking it. It's a weird line.
Crank the crystals and hit the knuckles.
It's a very weird line to be in the script. And then if this was MC Gainey just kind of riffing on the day and hey, that sounded fun, I get it. I mean, it's paused on my screen at 5 seconds. He has a marijuana leaf tattooed on his hand. So any of these references would make sense. I guess you're talking to somebody who has never smoked a cigarette, let alone anything beyond that. So this is not a world I know. But this to have been written in the script and then set out line and kept in the... No, this doesn't make any sense. I don't know what to do with this line.
I agree with you because I liked it a lot less when I learned it was in the script. I thought maybe it was NC Gainey. Like, you know, I grew up and that's what they used to say. It doesn't make sense. But no, this is in the script.
Do you think he even asked? Like he went to the scriptwriter and was like... Just give me some motivation here. What does this mean? And I'm like, shut up and do your job.
I think he understood the character. So one thing MC Gainey has said in interviews, this is his favorite character. I think he understood the character and worked out, yeah, this is the kind of thing this guy would say. I just kind of did it. He's a consummate professional. MC
Gainey. He's a consummate professional who, you know, has trouble landing the dang plane. Okay.
He lands the plane. The plane
lands. Rennie Harlan situation, is it not? Where landing a plane in the middle of the desert's hard enough, but then landing a plane over a Cessna and then 3 feet in front of a propane tank, which is in the script. Like, I was like, this is Rennie Harlan directed this. At this moment, I'm like, they're adding, like, there should have been geese in here. There should have been like something else, just 8 different things. Because
a plane, a wing just started falling off, and you got Danny Trejo leaning out trying to hold it in place whilst they're landing.
It's you're just watching. So this
you're thinking of George Kennedy in the airport movies, though. Yes. That's what he would have done.
Oh my gosh, yeah. But I just love problems on problems, and that's what this scene did twice, actually. Like John Cusack got hit with 2 things. Like when he goes up to the tower. The plane buzzes him, and then he goes back to his Corvette shed, opens up the, climbs into it for some reason, and then gets laid out and gets a bunch of cheap wood on his face. It's like there's, it's like a problems on problems chapter, and I loved it. Made me so happy.
Yeah. I mean, this is a great scene. I don't know what it is about the Cusack sticking his head up with that hatch and then getting knocked down. That's just burned into my memory of him up there and getting knocked down. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure I always associate it with Con Air, but it's just that scene is so vivid in my mind.
It's action Cusack.
Cusack is a wonder, yeah.
The rare action Cusack, yeah.
Billy Elliot Cusack too. I feel like the world got cheated.
Again, I introduced this movie to my son the other night, and we were talking about John Cusack, and you know, he's seen John Cusack in some other things. We've watched Better Off Dead and things like that. And I was trying to describe to him like the weird trajectory that John Cusack's career has taken. I mean, Cusack's like up there with, you know, he's doing the same kind of movies that like Nick Cage, Bruce Willis, those guys have been doing, Adrian Brody, you know, those, you know, they'll do anything. They'll do any dang movie, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but we kind of know the reason why Bruce Willis has been doing that recently. He's just trying to, whilst he can, he does the, you can have me for a day for $1 million.
Right.
Kind of thing. Cusack, at some point he just kind of gave up, I think, and just will do anything. I'm trying to think, when's the last time he made, I think Love and Mercy, 2014, seems to be the last time that he made.
Oh, he was good.
He's great film. In that. Good movie, yeah.
And he was so, I like that one. I don't know if he's tried since then.
Do you all remember when he came out with The Number Station in 2013?
No.
And that's when I started really kind of going, oh no, like this is not good, because Hot Tub Time Machine is a lot of fun. That movie, I adore it. What came out in 2009, 2010. He did The Paperboy in 2012, The Butler 2013.
The Raven. You skipped The Raven.
The Raven with the neck grab of doom. But then in Number Station in 2013, I remember going, oh no. Like I watched it and I was like, this is not good. This can't mean good things. Yeah, and you're right, Todd. Since then, he's been in The Jupiter Ascending. That's a great movie.
Right.
The Jupiter Landing. And just really odd films.
He was in 8 episodes of Utopia, a show I hear good things about but never saw. So he's in that, apparently. Which I didn't know, but he's like Pursuit, Never Grow Old, River Runs Red, Distorted, Singularity, Blood Money, Southern Fury. What are these films?
Southern Fury?
He plays Sam.
I wish he had done more stuff like Con Air, because, I mean, he's so good at, like, freakouts.
Southern Fury is him with Nick Cage.
No, it's not.
It's 2017. A Southern mobster attempts to rescue his kidnapped brother.
That's what it is.
Oh, okay. Here it's called Southern Fury. Nick Cage, John Cusack, Adrian Grenier, other actors.
Well, you know that's a Deadfall sequel.
I haven't seen Deadfall, Mark.
All right, watch Deadfall. Don't watch Deadfall. Fast forward to all of Nick Cage's scenes.
Wait, are we we're talking about the Deadfall that...
The mustache. Coppola movie.
I did an episode of the Forgotten Filmcast on that many moons ago. That movie is a must-see just for how bizarre it is.
Yeah, and this is a sequel. Arsenal or Southern Fury, the same character makes an appearance.
I didn't know that.
It's like a backdoor sequel to Deadfall. Arsenal here, but I like Southern Fury.
I guess if you called it Arsenal here, people would think that's a football film, maybe.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Southern Fury just makes it seem like someone has like a ladle full of grits and they just level it at somebody.
Yep. It's a sequel to My Cousin Vinny. Yeah. Age looks terrible in this. The wig.
Oh, yeah, it's bad. Do you know what? So in a lot of later Cusack movies, he just wears a hat. But it's one of those $3.99 hats, $3.99 hats, that just does not fit him well. Generic black hat that did a slap on his head. And it's on par with Julianne Moore in Next, her $2.99 hat. But yeah, they just basically put Cage in a hat now.
He's wearing it on the poster. I just pulled up the poster. He's wearing it right. Looks like the Unabomber.
Yeah. Terrible hat. Terrible hat work. I don't know what they're doing, but they just slap a hat on him. And they're like, all right, get to work.
Well, I mean, that his hairline isn't that. Maybe he's ashamed of that in some way. I don't know. Not something to be ashamed of.
But. Southern Fury. Also, Grenier's in a hat in this movie. Oh. I know it saves time on hair. It's just cheaper to slap a hat on somebody's head because you don't have to do hair. Like, you don't have to worry about it. So slap a head and you move fat. Like, it goes quicker. But, man, I hate bad hat. Like, Event Horizon, Julie Richardson, I love that movie, but she does some bad hat work. And even Anderson admitted to it. So I sense bad hats, and this is a bad hat. I've
never considered that hats would be a way of cutting down the budget on a film. Just put a hat on.
That's fucking just, bad hat, Harry.
Yeah.
Like, you just slap a hat on somebody. That's it. Like,
in Distorted, he's wearing a hood.
You know what I hate the most? Are unnecessary. Like, remember that Mortal Instruments? Every single character in that movie wore a hood. You're like, guys, you don't need that hood. Like, what's her name? She's the daughter of the Genesis drummer. Lily Collins. She's just wearing a hoodie.
Lily Collins.
They're just glowering the whole time with hoodies.
I remember hoodies. Episode title.
Yeah, I got way away from what we're talking about today.
The small plane pilot, his name is Ted in the credits. He's played by Bob Stevenson. I had a look at this guy. He's a David Fincher guy. He's been in Seven, The Game, Fight Club, and Zodiac. He was in Adaptation with Nick Cage. He's been in both McGee, Charlie's Angels films as different characters. And he played a senior engineer in Top Gun Maverick. But according to his own self-written IMDb profile, which always the best ones when they're self-written, directors like Simon West, Spike Jonze, and David Fincher hired him to write their music videos and do commercial treatments, but he has no credits for writing any music videos or commercial treatments on IMDb. Sorry. I found that interesting. I like him. This is the only chapter he's in, basically. I think he's good here.
He's very good. He reminds me of Jock from the beginning of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
He's in a plane there.
Yeah. Guy in a little plane, you know, clearly he's a little bit of a slob. I mean, the dashboard of his plane is a mess.
I counted at least 9 cans of drink.
It's Schlitz.
Yeah, the only one I could identify definitively was Schlitz. And I don't drink. So.
I assumed that was some kind of RC Cola.
So he's drinking and flying.
Well, he's not drinking. We don't see him drinking. He could already be drunk.
Can we infer it?
Yeah, why not?
He must drink while before flying. Unless he just goes out and lounges in the plane to, you know, suck back a beer every night.
Maybe he's one of those guys
fly.
Who has a boat parked on their driveway and he just likes to go out and hang out in their boat and drink in their boat. He just goes out and hangs out in his plane.
He does it with the plane.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that Danny Glover, Lethal Weapon reference?
Exactly. Yes. Or it's the people across the road from me reference as well. They do that.
So he just drinks in his plane on his days off
and hangs out with a little plastic alligator or dinosaur or whatever the heck that is that's sitting there.
I went for dinosaur. It looks like a compy to me. But maybe he lives in the plane. Maybe this is his home.
I mean, it looks like it. He's got boxes in the back.
Yeah.
He eats Cheetos. He's living the life, y'all.
Living the life. Not a good life.
That's definitely Schlitz in there. He's just
Did definitely kind of organize the cans and the bags of chips so that you couldn't definitively tell what products they were, so they wouldn't have to ask permission or anything like that.
They put a hat on him too.
What is Schlitz? Please, somebody tell me. What is Schlitz?
Oh, it's a beer. It's a lager. Beer.
I've never heard of it.
It's just a lager or maybe a pilsner. I don't know, but like a light beer.
Okay.
I've always figured that's where, you know, the TV show Laverne and Shirley, they worked at the Schatz Brewery. So I always assumed that Schatz was a take on Schlitz.
Whoa.
But what do I know?
There's Shell's Brewery in Minnesota. There's Schatz, there's Schlitz, there's Surly. They're all over the place. They're just running out of names. But no, I thought he was drinking in the plane.
He's got the kind of radio up to his mouth, so I don't think we see him drinking. But I think it would make sense given what we... I mean, we can... It's assumptions.
I mean...
But the character seems to drink.
He's not impaired enough to not realize that there's a massive plane coming right at him and to, you know, have the wisdom to jump out and get out of the way.
Was that maybe a mistake because the plane doesn't hit him? Maybe he misjudged everything and it would have been fine if he'd say, because he could have stayed in the plane and it would have been okay.
But see, that's the big thing that's missing from this scene. You know, he lands, the plane's coming right at him, he jumps out. You know, I wanted to see that tiny little plane get turned into mulch by the propellers of the big plane. What's the name of the plane again? The Jailbird.
Well, in the script, they have the two planes basically playing chicken, and Ted swerves off into a ditch at the last moment because he's in a small plane playing chicken with a large plane. That's he's
they should have had that in the script. They should have had him sitting there going, well, I'm not going to move. They're going to move. And Swampy's there going, I ain't moving. He's going to move, you know.
I like what you said, though. Why feature that if you're not going to turn a tiny plane into mulch? Like, every time I watch it, I'm always bummed that plane is not destroyed. It just sort of takes a left turn.
It is an odd, because, like, this guy doesn't come back. He runs off into the desert. You get one little line of Cyrus saying, hope you like sand. Although in the script, it's hope you like salt.
I hate sand. It's coarse and gets
everywhere. Yeah. Yeah, this is the inspiration for that. But yeah, this guy, then he's just, it's like it's a one-note joke and then it's gone. It really hardens up the landing a little bit more, makes it a bit more difficult, granted, but is it worth?
No, it is not worth it. I mean, the propane tank is enough.
I suppose it explains why, does it
they get stuck?
Explain why they get stuck? Because they have to swerve to avoid this, but do they swerve to avoid this? I don't think they do.
Here's a question. What if they just got into a brawl with Sandino's people and then that's what delayed them? And then they had to fight the cops off and leave as opposed to digging it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Well, because they're going into land, they have to go up and over this plane. So it doesn't, but it doesn't add a lot. I don't think it fully explains why they get stuck. But yeah. I like the involving Sandino's men a bit more. Because they have a big presence. They've been here. They killed a guy. They killed... what was his name? I wrote it down. Phil. They killed Phil on the tower.
Phil.
Yes. But and we see them in like a couple of weeks' time. And then that's it. Oh, we could have had Sindhina's men doing more.
I was looking at Phil's picture in this scene. I think it's just him in it.
Well, I looked up Phil. This is an actor. He's credited as air traffic controller. This is Scott Burkholder, who's been in a bunch of stuff. He's been in Crimson Tide. He was a Rent-A-Cop and Gone in 60 Seconds.
Oh, he's a Bruckheimer guy.
But one credit that stuck out to me was he's in an episode of Seinfeld. He's in the episode of The Airport, which I thought, he's in another plane film. He plays Prisoner in the episode of The Airport, which is the episode where Jerry and Elaine are on a plane flying to the airport. And Kramer and George are going to meet them at the airport to pick them up. And then George is trying to get a copy of Time magazine. And this guy is in handcuffs being transported on a plane. And George has an argument with him. And he's on the cover of Time magazine. And it just amused me that this guy is playing Prisoner in an episode called The Airport. And then he's on there.
Oh, that's a good pull.
It was great.
He flashes by so quickly. When I first caught him, I went, is that Tim Blake Nelson? But no,
And hey, how about the adherence to black and white in this scene too? So you have Cusack with his black and white tie, you have the kind of marbles that are black and white, you have the tape dispenser white and black, you have the mug that's black and white, you have the lunchbox that's black and white. Like, Jay, they really took some time on the production design here and like props.
When the plane's landing, it's a black silhouette on a very light colored ground.
Yeah. And he has a picture of just himself in
black and white.
In black and white in his office. I love it. That's some good.
You know what?
Props.
The thing though that's in the tower there in the props that I am disappointed that Jay did not mention. I thought he was going to lead with this, but it's one of the first things you see as John Cusack walks in there. What's there? There's a bird cage.
Yeah,
there,
it's an empty bird cage. Yeah. I've got it written down. There's an empty bird cage. Why is there an empty bird cage? It's open. The bird's gone.
Are you a bird cage guy? What happened to the bird, first of all?
It escaped.
But, I mean, I was like, well, there's some kind of, wonderful connection here. I mean, because I know how Jay feels about LL Cool J and his bird in Deep Blue Sea. And here, this poor guy has a bird. So
next, the body of Phil, there should be the body of a dead bird as well.
Next to it, like John Wick.
Or they ate his bird.
Oh, it's one of Sandino's men ate his bird.
Yeah, you ate my bird.
Oh. And then at the end, John Cusack goes, "This is for Phil's bird."
Not for Phil.
And then he blows up
specifically Sandino. His bird. I didn't have Phil.
Cyrus the Virus goes, "Who?"
Phil, the guy. Oh, it wasn't you. It was Sandino's guys. Like, okay, sorry. Either way, this is still for Phil's. Okay.
Yeah, but like, I need that. This is for Phil's bird. What? Oh, wait. When he's knocking out their airplane later on, Cusack, that's when he says it. This is for Phil's bird. And then takes out their bird, a.k.a. airplane.
Yeah. Yep. We solved it. There we go. Jeff dies.
I'm going to check the script, see if he wrote that.
Well, there's a whole conversation between Cyrus and Poe. That's in the script. I don't know if they filmed it or not, but it's cut from the film. It's prior to landing, as they are landing. You have Cyrus comes back and sits down next to Poe. And I'm just going to kind of read it, if that's okay. Once I find it, hang on. Cyrus says, this is some kind of situation we find ourselves in, isn't it? And Poe replies, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Cyrus is like, yes, sir. Why aren't we polite? Someone once called me a sissy for being polite. You know what I told him? There's a man in manners, so why don't you get some? And Cyrus laughs at that. There's a man in manners? That's a good one. When I heard they were building Feltham, I knew they would send me there. Locked down 24/7. I also knew I'd never see it. I am no longer willing to live just for the privilege of breathing. Great line. Do you understand that? Of course. This has been years in the making, Cameron, and nothing will stop it. He calls him Cameron. I think this is why this whole thing was cut, because Cyrus never calls Poe Cameron
in the whole
film. Poe says it's a thing of Breezy Cyrus. Prison tries to kill everything that's evil inside a man, Cameron. That's its sole purpose. Sometimes, though, it works the other way, and everything good inside dies. I've seen it happen. I don't know what's happened to my Cameron Poe.
Yeah, keep going.
I haven't had a good thought in years, Cameron. Not a one until today. Because today, one way or another, we will be free. But tell me, what do you want, Cameron Poe? Full name there. What do I want? I just want a cold beer, my little girl speeding by on her big wheel. I'm changing the oil on a 70 Chevelle SS396 with four on the floor, 331 positive traction, and a pair of Edmund Hedder's coming in a close second to my daughter's giggles for the sweetest sound there is. Jesus Christ.
Oh.
But that's not going to happen. So let's get back to doing what we do well. Killing, maiming, and making people miserable.
Oh,
that's the conversation that was cut.
I'm glad they cut that. I think I just would have fallen on the floor had they kept that in the script. That's bad. I have a really random question to ask y'all, because in this one, Cusack has these circular glasses that he's wearing.
Yep.
And it made me think about The Matrix. And do you think Cusack would have been better than Keanu?
Ooh. I think in The Matrix it would have been much the same, but he would have cost more money. I think they would have given very similar performances. Is it not a fun answer? But that's what I think.
I'm very torn because, I mean, I love Keanu in The Matrix, but there's a part of me that, you know, wants to jump into the multiverse and see Cusack do it.
Yeah, he's right. The problem with Keanu, I think Keanu is incredibly smart. I mean, you can't have that long of a ride in the industry and not be and have so many people respect you. But he's better at being aloof than Cusack is. Like, I think Cusack, as soon as he's unplugged for The Matrix, he's like, yeah, I got it. You don't have to explain it to me.
Yeah,
I'm just smart. Yeah. I'm Cusack. So as soon as someone explains it to, so the red pill means this, the blue pill means this. If I do this, this means this, and I can't, you know, this is an air I'm breathing. So then I'm thus, like, it becomes a very, I don't know.
He starts explaining it back to Morpheus.
Yeah, Morphine's like, oh my gosh, he's the one.
I want to see Colmeany in the Joey Pants role.
I want to see Colmeany in the Keanu role.
Red or what? Red pill.
Red pill, blue pill.
I'm angry the whole way. The Irish
Colmeany is, Colmeany is Morpheus.
Yeah, that would work.
Just take the pill. There's a guy named Smith out there. He's an asshole.
I can't nail his accent, though.
It's not even close. It's a tricky one. I can't do it either.
I can't do what an Irish guy trying to have an American accent and then just failing at it. Yeah. So, yeah, I couldn't do it.
It's a tricky needle to thread.
That's a random question. I know.
I know. I'd never considered any like alternate casting for The Matrix because Keanu just seems so perfect in that. Because people say that he's a sort of a blank slate sometimes, and that's what you need Neo to be. Because he's a baby, essentially.
Because Cusack would just be overthinking it.
Yeah.
And it would just lead to like a Before Sunset Matrix, or him and Morpheus just walking along the streets chatting.
Yeah, that sounds awful.
He's a kickboxer, though. Gross Point Blank has a great hallway fight, so maybe he would have been better in the John Wick series.
No. He would have been good, but Keanu. I'm in the Keanu bag.
Okay, so, Todd, you showed your son Better Off Dead. You know Cusack. Which role could Cusack have taken from Keanu Reeves and have been better at it?
What role could Cusack have taken from Keanu Reeves and be better at it?
Bram Stoker's Dracula? Gosh.
Voicing the cat in Keanu.
Bram Stoker's? Chain Reaction?
Well, Bram Stoker's. That one's a little painful.
I feel bad about that. Coppola admitted that he just loves Keanu so much that he never corrected him because Keanu was trying so hard. I'm like, Coppola, you should have worked with a man. Like, you should have.
Direct. But you should have directed.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But he's such a nice guy. Let's see. Sweet November. The Lake House. Oh, The Lake House.
Kaboom.
Cusack could Lake House the crap out of that role. Looking in, I think Cusack would do a great job.
He doesn't use Lake House as a verb.
I'm almost
tempted to say Johnny Mnemonic.
Oh. With the little helmet in the VR set, Cusack doing VR.
Yeah.
Oh, fighting Dolph Lundgren and a dolphin. We need this movie. Oh, yeah, I'm saying that or Lake House because I want to see Cusack look into a mailbox. I think he could really do a good job at that. I could really picture Cusack staring into a mailbox.
Okay, well, what Cusack role is Keanu taking?
High fidelity.
I hate 2012? To say that because I love Cusack. I mean, that's the thing. Why I say that it's weird to look at his career now. I mean, he was of the 80s teen stars growing up as a teen in the 80s myself. He was one of the ones that I related with for sure.
Sure thing, too. Sorry to interrupt, Todd. Yeah, sorry.
Oh, sure thing. I mean, that's wonderful. And I love him when he's. Wasn't even a big name yet. He's a bit part. He's one of Anthony Michael Hall's buddies in 16 Candles, wearing weird things on his head. You know, he's great in that. The movie I always remember with Cusack that doesn't get a lot of love, and I admit it's not one of his best, but it's got moments, is one called Hot Pursuit, where he's got just a wonderful freak out moment in that movie where he just gets on a plane and then some terrorists jump on and he wrestles the gun away from the terrorists, is like, no, no, we're going to Laguna Del Mar or something like that. I don't remember the line, but no, Cusack's wonderful. I need 80s Cusack back.
Do we reckon Keanu?
I'm going to watch this.
Reckon Keanu could pull off being Nixon in The Butler?
I haven't seen The Butler.
I think he could must love dog it. Keanu could.
This is upsetting, Mark.
So Todd, you know that growing up, I didn't really have any characters I ever related to, but when I watched Say Anything, I think that was the first character that I ever thought, wait, that's kind of like, that's not me, but that's kind of me.
Right.
Where he's
no, exactly.
Like he's not a nerd, but he's not the popular guy. he's sensitive, but it also kick you in the face because he's a kickboxer and he doesn't want to like buy anything or sell anything bought and sold. And he's very neurotic, but he's also kind of smooth with like the glass kicking. So I wasn't much of that, but I was like, oh, you can be a nice guy, but also kick people. Cause I used to box and wrestle and like play football, but I was also like a really sensitive kid. But growing up, you never would believe that you could fit in multiple boxes. So when I saw that, I'm like, oh wait, like this guy is, this guy is different. And
he's
so
a
that was
good
one.
Guy.
Of the, yeah, he's a good guy. Guy.
He listens to Peter Gabriel. That was me.
Yeah.
He wore a trench coat. That was me. He liked Ione Sky. That's me.
Yeah, you see, I could never wear a trench coat. I don't have the confidence for that. But yeah, it's, I don't know. He was the first, I think Cusack was the first character ever where I went, or I'm sorry, Lloyd Dobler, that went, oh, I actually relate to this guy. So Cusack has always been a favorite of mine. Like, I love the guy. Like, he's great. So yeah, but I think Keanu and Muscle of Dogs, and then he could Muscle of Dog it, Jay. And then, yeah. I forget which one I said Cusack would be
you
good for
said
Keanu.
It's Lakehouse.
The Lakehouse. So, yeah. He could so mailbox the heck out of it.
We are switching two films I haven't seen. So far.
Oh, man. Oh, wait, all right. So we should do this real quick. Todd, me and you. Let's do a John Cusack, or you and Jay. John Cusack movie draft.
Oh, no.
Oh.
You pick five. Jay picks five.
We could all do
Todd,
this,
you
Mark.
Get first
you can
pick
five as well.
Okay, we'll do three. All right, so Todd, you get first pick. I'll take third pick.
I'll take Better Off Dead first. All
right, Better Off Dead.
Jay? I'm going to take High Fidelity, the Cusack character I probably relates to most of the kid if he switched out movies for music. Because he's awful. He's an awful person.
He is, right? Horrible. So bad. I'll take Say Anything. I don't care. I'm going to Say Anything.
All right, Gross Point Blank.
Oh, yeah, you just want it right there. He's so good in that movie.
I'll take Quicken Tin. Ridiculous idea.
Tin Cup?
No, I haven't seen Tin Cup. See, Cusack is not one of my guys. I'm not. I don't dislike the guy. I just haven't seen a bunch of his films. Like, I haven't seen Better Off Dead. I haven't seen The Sure Thing, I think. I've seen
Daphne Zuniga.
I'll take Identity. I like Identity.
Hey, there we go.
That's a fun film that falls
all right,
apart.
One Crazy yeah. Summer.
I'm oh, I hate you, Mark. Oh.
Hoops. Bobcat Goldthwait. Perfect.
That's a great movie. Okay, that's off the table. Then I'll take The Sure Thing.
Oh, crap.
Man, oh, it's me.
This is a win.
I'll take Being John Malkovich.
Oh, wow. That's actually a
taking,
really good one.
I'm taking the 80s films because I don't know them.
Right, so Being John Malkovich. Not taking 2012 because all he does in that movie is drive.
Yeah.
He just drives from one place to another.
He doesn't drive to the moon, so why would you want it?
Man, oh, Serendipity. That's my movie.
Serendipity's good. I like Serendipity.
That's my film right there. I'm that obsessed with that movie.
It takes Serendipity.
Oh, I'm serendipitying it, Jay.
Oh. Then I'll go, what, this is fourth pick, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. Eight Men Out.
Oh, that's a good one. Him and B-Pep, right? Yeah. Is that, or yeah. Is it Thomas Jane?
No. Oh, yeah. No, Barry Pepper's in that.
Oh, yeah. I love some B-Pep. Crawl.
Yeah. Go. Yeah, Crawl's fantastic. Cusack and Crawl would be a worse film, I think. Runaway Jerry, yeah. Why not?
Oh, that's a good pick.
No, it's not.
People love that movie.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they do.
No, they don't.
Oh, I'm taking Hot Tub Time Machine. That's a lovely movie. Hot Tub Time Machine, that's my fourth pick. He has a deep venture.
Okay, last one.
Yeah.
And I assume Con Air is not on the table.
Yo, you can take it.
I'm being nice and not doing it. I'll actually go Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil. I think that film movie is underrated.
Yeah.
I'll take Con Air. No, I'm not going to do that. No, because everyone already loves Con Air.
You know someone's going to be like, why don't you take Con Air?
Yes, then listen to the show. he's only in one scene, but I do remember liking that scene. So The Thin Red Line.
That's a great poll.
The Terrence Malick film I don't hate.
You're not a Terrence Malick guy?
I'm not a Terrence Malick guy. I think he's one of the most overrated directors working ever in the history of film. I feel like a good director would have an idea of what the film's going to be before they shoot it, and would then shoot accordingly. I like efficiency in my artists. I don't like them to shoot hours and hours and hours and days and months worth of film to just throw it away. I find that incredibly wasteful. I have a grudge against Terrence Malick for several of the films I've had to sit through. And
you live life on the edge. You don't like The New World?
I haven't seen The New World. That's one I haven't got to. But I did not enjoy The Tree of Life. I thought that was quite a bad film. And people need to calm down about it because it's not very good.
I think I love Tree of Life. All right, so I'm going to take Love and Mercy. Because he's amazing in Love and Mercy. Well, it's just about Sean Penn thinking about his brother's passing. Like, so he's going and everything's a wisp of a memory because he's thinking about growing up with his family.
Yeah,
so it all really feels like a dream. But narratively, it makes sense, though, because he's like, hey, I'm thinking back to when my brother died and remembering my youth and wondering what the world's all about and life and death. And so that's why the dinosaurs and all that stuff.
I wish I'd taken a nap. That's all I can say.
That should be on the Blu-ray cover.
That's like, I wish, you know, I could have 2 more hours of sleep under my belt in my life at this point. That's why I begrudge Terrence Malick for.
But all right, listen to this bench here: Better Off Dead, Gross Point Blank, The Sure Thing, 8 Men Out, Midnight in the Garden of Good and Evil, High Fidelity, Identity, Being John Malkovich, Runaway Jury, The Thin Red Line, Say Anything, One Crazy Summer, Serendipity, Hot Tub Time Machine, Love and Mercy. That's a pretty good bench.
And that is missing stuff like Stand By Me, 16 Candles, let's see, The Grifters.
Oh, The Grifters. Oh, yeah, we forgot The Grifters.
You know, I can't believe I didn't say Tapeheads. I love Tapeheads.
Do you want to add it to your team? That's fine.
No, I'm fine. I like my team. But Cusack's been in a lot of good stuff. Why is he still not doing it? You know,
yeah, the guy's got talent.
I kind of thought maybe Love and Mercy was the turning point, but he did that lesser films before that, because I thought maybe he did Love and Mercy, didn't get an Oscar nomination, and just kind of did the Adam Sandler thing of like, if I'm not going to get an Oscar for doing Uncut Gems, then sod it, I'll make the worst film again. And I don't know if that's what Cusack has done.
Do you think in 5 years he's going to star in The Whale 2?
Still wailing.
There you go.
Maybe.
Yeah. Still wailing?
The Whale 2, Thrill Seeker. There we go.
He's the neighbor the below.
Whale 2, Thrill Seeker.
Oh, gosh. Just storm back for an Oscar. Wait, no, he could do Jackie Brown 2.
I feel like he shouldn't be the lead in Jackie Brown 2. If he can have like a kind of Michael Keaton-esque role in Jackie Brown,
or like a Forrester type role.
Yeah, that works.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Forrester should have won an Oscar for his work in Alligator. He's so good in that movie. I'm saying it. Nominate him.
Forrester is good at just about anything.
Yeah, that's true. He's wonderful in that. He'd have been good in this movie.
What would he have done in Con Air? Who could he have been?
He's so sage. Like everything he says, you just feel is truthful.
I'd like to put him in place of Skip Devers. No offense to the actor who plays Skip Devers, Cusack's boss. But he's not Robert Forster.
The guy that's flying around with Colm Meaney, is that who we're talking
about? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, I was thinking the exact same thing.
Roselius is him. You kind of forget him sometimes because you've got Cusack and Colm Meaney in all of the scenes and they're having a delightful argument and he's just kind of standing in the back with a loose tie. But you put Robert Forster in that role, then that's a three person scene.
Yeah.
Two person scene for another guy. Yeah. There we go.
So Todd, how would you rate Con Air, how would you rank Con Air, The Rock, and Face Off?
I put Con Air first.
Hey, correct answer.
I'm not the biggest fan of The Rock. I think The Rock is fun, but I think The Rock has a lot of problems. And Face Off, I mean, I haven't revisited as much as some others. So, I mean, of those three, Con Air, definitely. Yeah.
Oh. Jay is so happy when you said that.
Vindication. Yeah. That's... No one puts Con Air to us. Love Con
Air. I'm with you, Jay.
I feel like I'm a face-off guy because I just feel like it's undistilled John Woo.
It's, yeah, it's
undistilled. And Nick Cage, Andrew Altaval. Yeah. It's just everyone was at the height of their powers and they just made a movie that was so insane with the priest outfit and just one of the wildest, weirdest movies. So I think I would put that there just because I like chaos. I think that's my number one. But kind of, it's like ranking three awesome things, though. It's oh, I like all three of them.
Now, if John Cusack was in Face Off, who would he be swapping faces with?
Keanu Reeves.
That's
there. Well, there you go.
Oh my gosh, Face Off with John Cusack and Keanu Reeves.
I think Cusack. Who's who? I think Cusack would be in the Cage role, and Keanu would be in the Travolta role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's not that amazing. It really matters in that film because they both play both. But that's what. That's I a... yeah.
Todd, how did you feel about Cage's action run? In the late 90s.
Oh, I would totally on board with that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's again, I mean, I know I keep bringing back the subject of watching movies with my kids and such, but I mean, they love the Nick Cage 90s run. You know, they're like just, oh, Nick Cage is in this. All right. You know, I mean, like last night, my son and my wife, they sat down and they were trying to find something to watch. And they were like, well, let's give this National Treasure, you know, new series that's on Disney Plus a try. And my son was like, yeah, Nick Cage isn't in it, though. You know,
that's amazing. Yeah, that his action run blew me away in the 90s. It was because the Guardian Test guy was all buff now all of a sudden. It kind of did you watch Valley Girl? Like, did you like Valley Girl? Did you like his one
Valley Girl? Yeah, I mean, Valley Girl's not one that I grew up with, but, you know, I'd certainly seen it. But, see, yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I love about watching Cage's career is seeing him, you know, early on in those teen roles where he's in stuff like Valley Girl. He's got a small part in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. And then you start to see him peppered in these other things. And then he's got the 90s action run. And then there's the you know, more award consideration type stuff where he's doing your, you know, adaptation and Leaving Las Vegas and things like that. And now it's, you know, Anything Goes, Cage. You know,
it's why he was so perfect for the unbearable weight of massive talent. Because he has... It's like such an incredible career. It's like that film makes sense with no other actor.
You know what scene made me so happy? I know it's your number two, Jay, your number two film of 2022. Oh, and it features one of my favorite scenes when Pedro Pascal and Nick Cage swap loafers for Vans. Like just the discussion about shoes and how they switched them and how they have no ankle support. My wife went out and bought me some Vans because I love that scene. Yeah, so much.
Your family will have matching Vans now. You posted.
Yeah, we have our family has matching Vans because of the unbearable weight of massive talent. All three of us. My daughter has tiny 16-month-year-old Vans that match mine, and I just bought a hat today that matches them. So, yeah, we're accessorizing around the unbearable weight, Jay. It makes me very happy.
I'm happy to hear that. So I want to talk about when they get off the plane because they land. They're in Lerna. They get off the plane. I love that Ving Rhames just has a gun tucked in his belt behind him, but he's got his hand ready to go on it, just in case something happens. He's ready. But when they get off, the supporting cons that we've seen all like run off. So Viking does a foot, like throws his shirt off and does a flip onto his back. For some reason, great. I don't think he wears that shirt for the rest of the film. This is when the shirt gets lost. But Cyrus has a couple of lines delivered as deadpan as possible. Lerna Airfield, I'm so glad to be here. Thank you, she's in Con Air. Then he has a little altercation with Sindino because the plane's not here. Sindino's plane isn't here. And Sindino tells him to have patience, which Cyrus's reply is, the last person told him to have patience, I burned him down and bagged his ashes.
Why?
For what purpose?
Why did you bag the ashes? That's my thought exactly, Jay. I listened to that line. I was like, all right, you burned him down. Okay, but you bagged the ashes.
At that point, he's dead.
I mean, you really need those ashes. Just let him blow in the wind Thanos style.
Did he like post them back to the guy's family? Or did he sprinkle them somewhere the guy hated? So this isn't a tribute to you. This is just further torment. Oh,
I hate the Pittsburgh Steelers. Yeah, he goes back and puts them on the field.
Yeah, exactly. Remember, you had that terrible vacation in Cyprus that one year. Well, that's where your ashes are going.
Maybe he promised he would like sprinkle his ashes somewhere. Like in the Big Lebowski type of a scene. Yeah.
Blows back into somebody's face, in a Diamond Dog's face.
They were like stuck in Danny Trejo's hair.
The thing I don't get about this sequence, Jay, you said all the cons go running off and, they're all cheering and stuff and they run towards the meager buildings there. I'm like, what are they so excited about? Are they thinking there's a Dunkin' Donuts in there or something like that? I mean, it's not like most airports. It's like you're going to find a snack bar or something like that.
The ones who are doing the most celebrating seem to be the ones that they picked up at the last run. So these are the guys, this is their first. They've only more recently learned of the freedom. This is their first time off of the plane free. So they're just, they're out. It's dry land, essentially. They've been lost at the sea of the American prison system, and now they're out. I don't know. I get what they're celebrating.
In the director's cut, they have a cart full of cigarettes and booze, too. So they went and raided everything and found cigarettes and booze. Like a full cart full. My biggest problem with the scene, if you go to 239 on the clip you sent, Jay, when he's talking to Sandino and Todd, his shirt, his white shirt, Cyrus's shirt, it's too clean.
Yep.
He's been through some things. Look at that thing. They gave it to him that day.
Because the back of his shirt, when he got off the plane, is a big sweat patch, which has gone through the white t-shirt and the guard uniform. Because if that was sweat from the original guards, that would have dried by now. That was like hours ago.
That's gross.
Yeah. But this one's clean. It's a brand new shirt that they put on him.
And that's foul.
That's kind of a bummer.
Maybe he put on a fresh one, because, they do that big dramatic entrance. They all, it's like, come on, guys, let's line up in front of the door so we can stand there as it slowly opens and look all menacing and stuff.
Well, he's got to make a good impression for Sandino's men. Because for all he, this is all for Sandino's, is it his uncle, I think it was? Who's the big drug lord who contacted Cyrus? In the script, he said the plan had been years in the making. So Sandino's uncle contacted him years ago? Or was Cyrus already planning an escape and just this happened to go inside? I don't know. Either way, that shirt is too clean. I agree. All of the uniforms are too kind of pressed and neat when that plane door opens. And Fingrams has his buttoned up. It's a very warm day. Everyone's sweaty.
Middle of the desert.
They should have just let someone sit on those costumes for a little bit just to give them some smush. If that makes sense. Wrinkle them up a little bit.
Still hate the Sandino's shirt. It's buttoned all the way to the top. It looks so uncomfortable.
That's like gang style.
Looks so uncomfortable. he's not a big guy, and this is more of if you have like a thicker neck like I do, then it's just unpleasant to have a shirt buttoned up. But okay, it's a thin guy thing maybe.
I wish I could rock that look. Elijah Wood does it a lot too. I just can't do it. Like, I'm not, I guess I'm too big for that, the button all the way up look. I don't feel too confident. I can't wear a trench coat. I can't wear, white jeans. I just don't have that confidence to pull it off.
We're learning all about Mark's fashion faux pas here.
I've never even thought about white jeans before.
I'm all out of V-neck.
But I love Garland in the background, just kind of like, well, what do I do now? He's like ambled off the plane, just kind of looking around. Like, what? There's no one to kill? Yeah.
Well, let's go.
This is dazed in the background. And when they land, MC Gainey's laugh when they land, the kind of that let out that burst of relief when they didn't hit the propane tank. I love that laugh.
Oh man, it's so unnecessary. Crashing a plane is scary enough. You don't need propane tanks.
You don't.
Propane and propane accessories. Jay, you missed one of my favorite parts of the crash landing. though, in this, partially because I'm proud of myself for knowing a word in a foreign language, because as they're landing, you see Santino, he shouts cuidado as they're you know, approaching the small plane and that. And I sit there and go, I know what that means. I didn't take Spanish. The only Spanish I know is what I learned on Sesame Street, you know, uno, dos, tres, that whole thing. But I know cuidado because of Monty Python's Flying Circus.
What is cuidado?
It's look out. Look out. Okay. And there's a skit I always remember where John Cleese is speaking in Spanish, and it's about llamas. He's talking about llamas in Spanish, and there's subtitles at the bottom of the screen, and he talks about how llamas are dangerous creatures and they hang out in the water and all this, and if you see one, you should shout cuidado llamas, and the subtitle says look out llamas. And so that's how I know what cuidado means, because of Monty Python.
I don't think I got to that one yet. I was going through Flying Circus for a while, and I kind of tailed off because my wife didn't want to watch it, basically, and it's not her thing, which is fine. Wait, that's in series one? I must have seen that one then. Okay.
I thought they made all British people like watch that before the age of five. Isn't that required viewing?
Parents despise that show. My Joan Cleese is my grandma's least favorite person. Like, she hates Fawlty Towers, my favorite show of all time.
So she hates John Cleese, then Hitler, then okay.
Yeah, pretty much. complicated woman, my grandma.
Complicated woman, I like it. I know my brother he really dislikes Leonardo DiCaprio, and I've never been able to figure it out, but it's very visceral, his dislike of DiCaprio.
Actors just really don't know. I've got a list. It's fine. Dennis Quaid. Yeah. I'm not a fan for no reason. I just don't like him.
You're not a Quaider?
Not a Quaider.
You didn't get Pandorum'd?
I mean, I've watched Pandorum.
That has
Cam Gigandet in it as well, so that didn't help.
Man, he's really good in Never Back Down. Are you a fan of Jaws 3?
I did like Jaws 3, which Todd was on Deep Sea to talk about Jaws 4. Yeah. But Jaws 3 was fun. You got Leah Thompson in that one as well.
It's not in good company.
Horrible 3D effects.
I was watching the latest Disney movie Strange World the other day, and when I finally realized the father character was voiced by Dennis Quaid, I thought, oh, there goes Jay's rating.
I didn't rate that one very highly, but I did like that his son in that is played by Jake Gyllenhaal. They played father and son in Day After Tomorrow. This was brought up to them in an interview.
Oh yeah.
And Jake Gyllenhaal was like, what? No, what are you talking about? Because he had forgotten making that film and working with Dennis Quaid.
Oh, wow. Because they were never really together. He was mostly in a library burning books.
There's like a scene at the start and a scene at the end, pretty much. They bookend it together. Yeah, spoiler.
He's like, you're probably thinking about Topher Grace. No, like, that's in good company. I think Zodiac destroyed Gyllenhaal. He just hasn't come back mentally.
And Nightcrawler.
And Prisoners.
Jesus, his mind is a mess at the moment, yeah.
I think Prince of Persia did him in.
It certainly didn't help.
But that Toby Kebbell's in that movie. I'm a big Toby Kebbell guy.
Prince of Persia was the film that made Alfred Molina be the actor with the most Lego minifigures made of his characters. Because he had... at the time, he's been surpassed now, I think. Because then he had Prince of Persia, which... Why did they make Lego Prince of Persia? Someone explain that to
because
me.
Because they had a deal with Disney, I'm sure. Yeah. You know, it was a Disney flick.
Raiders of the Lost Ark and Spider-Man 2.
Did Gyllenhaal play like, it's Gyllenhaal in a, like, who is he in that movie?
He's the Prince of Persia.
Is he Persian?
I mean, probably.
Oh, man.
Neither is Gemma Arterton
in that movie.
Yeah.
Oh, Hollywood. Gosh. Nightcrawler is great, though. And Billy Pax is in that movie. He's my boy.
I mean, is he even Russian? Or, like, teleporting?
Wait, Gyllenhaal was Russian in a movie?
In Nightcrawler. Because Nightcrawler is Russian, I think.
Oh. Wait, so who's Alfred Molina have? Is he like Raiders, Spider-Man 2?
Raiders, Spider-Man 2, Coffee and Cigarettes? Prince of Persia. Yeah. And yes, and the infamous Lego set for Coffee and Cigarettes, of course.
It's just a bunch of diners. Like, it's a bunch of, all the vignettes are Legoed. Oh, I want the RZA and Bill Murray one. That'd be pretty great. Who, do you think Was it Chris Pratt now that has it?
Oh, I mean, he has the Lego movie, so that's kind of sealed it.
I didn't think about that.
Guardians.
I was wondering about Andy Serkis, possibly.
Gollum.
King? There's not been a Lego Snoke. King Kong. There should be a Lego King Kong, but there's not been one.
Did Mandy get a Lego set?
Yeah, but it's not King Kong. I don't think there is a Lego Mandy or a Lego Color Out of Space or a Lego Pig.
Out of Space set? Just melted llamas into each other?
Yeah, I think Chris Evans might be there.
I think Chris Pratt, because there's the Her Lego set. There's the Moneyball Lego set.
How about the John Cusack Lego minifigure set?
Oh, Lego being John Malkovich would be fun. See how that
little minifig of John Cusack in a trench coat holding a boombox above his head? Come on, who doesn't want that?
Yes. Oh, that would be amazing. And also a serendipity one where he's sitting next to an elevator.
The Lego Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, yeah.
I would learn that Lego.
Yeah.
Jay.
Hot Tub Time Machine could be a, wait, could be a decent Lego set,
gets,
actually.
You who gets
a
Lego Hot Tub. The Sweat Bucket Award this chapter, Jay?
There is one brief shot of Baby. He's always sweaty, so I'm quite tempted to give it to him just by default, because like the new pilot isn't that sweaty. The dead guy is more bloody than sweaty.
Cusack has some good forehead sweat.
Yeah, Cusack's not had it yet. Let's give Cusack the Sweat Bucket Award for this chapter. Yeah,
he's good back sweat around, going on and for it. Yeah, he's Billy Elliot in off it again. He's going full Billy Elliot, Jay.
He is. Yes, he's still doing his prompt run.
All right, so Cusack gets a Sweat Bucket Award.
Yeah, there's 18 cons in the air, and then they land, so there's no cons in the air at the end of it. We don't know if Ted is a con of any kind. We can't assume that, so we're sticking with 18. But if he is, then it'll be 19.
What about Phil?
Phil's dead.
Do you think he could have been a con?
Could have been. If he was, then we'd have to work out what he did, because he's dead now.
That's a great point.
So let's say he's not.
Okay.
Then we can get out of it. So Todd, any more thoughts on this chapter or the film as a whole, or any other Lego sets you want to see from Cusack?
I do want to give a little love to the Boneyard. I want to give some love to the Boneyard, because this is where we first see it, and I think that's cool. Makes me think of the Boneyard from Can't Buy Me Love. So yeah.
A 2012 Lego set would be good.
And what's that movie we covered, Jay, with the Boneyard, the one that we talked about pull-ups a lot? The Best Years of Our Lives. You can't take it with
yes,
you.
Yes. Best Years of Our Lives. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was trying to look out, because we talked about pull-ups and the Boneyard in this film.
Both films we talked about pull-ups and Boneyards.
Veins.
There's a theme.
No wet socks in Con Air. I can reckon. But we did talk about wet socks in the Best Years of Our Lives minutes for about 12 minutes. The whole episode dedicated to wet socks. But yeah, Best Years of Our Lives, fantastic film.
That movie's 3 hours.
It is.
Everyone had talked about everything already. So
yes, it's true.
We brought some funk to it.
Not complaining that we talked about wet socks for 20 minutes, but it's notable.
Yeah.
It's unusual.
Hey, they welcomed us back, so it's good.
So you say they welcomed us back. They didn't turn down my email saying, hey, can we take part?
Well, they could have just ignored it.
They could. That's very true. Anyway. Look out for Bowfinger Minute coming soon on Good Podcasters. But Todd, where can the listeners find you online? What have you got to plug?
Well, my blog is called Forgotten Films. It's at forgottenfilmcast.wordpress.com. That's also where you will find links to my podcast, which is called The Forgotten Filmcast. We just posted an episode earlier this week on a movie called The White Buffalo from 1977, which is basically a Western mixed with Jaws with Charles Bronson, except it's not a shark, delightful. It's a buffalo. Yeah. So, and the episode before that, Jay was on it. So
I was,
we talked about a movie with cons.
We talked about Riot and Cellblock 11, which features a Con Air cast member. It features Dabs Greer, who's the old timer under the truck in a future episode. And Mark, Riot and Cellblock 11, so many Con Air similarities. It's set in a prison. There's a prison break. One of the inmates is a former military guy who's like trying to be a good guy inside and trying to quash the breakout. The sleeper's just all over the place. It's very Con Air adjacent, this film. There's more things, but I can't remember what they
were. Agreed. Yeah. No, good flick.
Good flick. It's very good film. Yeah. Don Siegel picture. It's on YouTube.
Yeah. So check out all that stuff. Follow me on Twitter at Forgotten Films, films with a Z.
I recommend it. And you can find like 4 or 5 other episodes that I've been on over the years on there as well.
Yeah. I did a Knight Riders episode probably 4 years ago, too.
Yes. Mark was on. We talked about George A. Romero's Knight Riders. And we're going to get Mark on again here real soon. So that's coming up.
And we have a Tremors episode on movies, films, and flicks.
That was a blast. Yes.
Yeah. Fun to listen to.
Perfect
well.
Movie. Yeah. Perfect movie.
Well, speaking of movies, films, and flicks, Mark, what do you got to plug?
Yeah, that. And Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. I was looking through it again. Like, I love our underwater episode, so go listen to that. I never rant or get angry about things, but I got pretty hyped up during the underwater episode.
He did.
Because it's a good movie. It's fun. Like, get over yourself. Just go watch it. Enjoy it.
It's a fun rant when, like, you're ranting that something's good.
Yes. And then go watch The Lake House and Serendipity with Cusack and Keanu Reeves.
What, The Lake House? Because it's, like, close to the
water. Don't watch The Lake House. Watch Serendipity. But it's glorious.
Could it be Deep Blue Sea adjacent? Is it on a lake? How far do we stretch this?
I mean, I could stretch Serendipity just because I like it.
As Mark,
I hear the most recent episode of Deep Blue Sea, this podcast, is excellent.
Yes, I'm trying to plug it.
Poseidon. wait. Deep Blue Sea has a lot of elevator work. Serendipity has very important elevator work. So okay, there we go. So Jason,
look out for a future episode on M. Night Shyamalan's Devil, then, I guess.
Can we do it? That's like one of my favorites.
I know it is. They wear red.
Wait, no, he wrote it. He wrote it. He didn't direct it. The Dowdles who did As Above, So Below. Okay. Like the Dowdles directed it.
As Above, So Below, probably more Deep Sea adjacent because it's about deep. Anyway, it's about deep. That's a sentence for you. So
that's a good one.
Yes, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. Todd has been on very recently to talk about the Poseidon Adventure for our New Year's episode. And then we followed that up with Beyond the Poseidon Adventure because it just seemed about right. So Todd did some double bill. Wonderful episodes. Check them both out. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast.
I have officially reached my quota for podcasting with Jay for the year, and we're only at the middle of January. That's right.
Todd and I have done about five shows together in the past month or so, I think, which is your show. Todd very graciously hosted the Lampity episodes over on the Lampcast that I was a contestant for last year, which turned out to be more than anyone expected. So I'm very grateful to Todd for doing that. You should listen to the Lampity final, which, spoiler alert, I am in with Todd hosting over on the Lambcast. And now I'm back to hosting that for the new tournament. So head over to the Lambcast to listen to that. And you can find my writing over at lifeversusfilm.com, where I've done a complete ranking of all the 2022 films I watched in 2022. So 70. I watched 70 new releases last year, which is a lot for me. It's not that's a lot good. For Mark. That's Mark's good. Probably like done triple that. But that's good for me.
I ranked them all. I love the ranking.
I did. And some of them didn't come off very well, and some of them we covered on Deep Blue Sea, the podcast. So let's move on from that. So yes, Connor.
I wholeheartedly endorse your high rating of Chippendale Rescue Rangers,
Thank you. That's the one that people have disagreed with me the most on, and I don't care for their opinions.
No.
I liked that.
That movie was a blast. Yeah.
Good. Wonderful. So that'll do it for Con Air Chapter 24. Thank you once again to our guest, Todd Liebenow.
Thank you.
I have been Jake Lewitt.
And I'm Mark Hoffmeyer.
Come back next week or the bunny gets it.
Sigh.
Anara.